Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, part of the Strange Society Network. For all your horror podcasting needs on Twitter, you can find them at StrangePodNet. I am Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is.
Billy Crash.
Yes, and Billy, we are now going into the month of February, and all good horror fans know that actually, among a lot of other things that themed months that are celebrated in the month of February, it is Women in Horror Month. So, with our little podcast doohickey here, we like to find some themes or tropes or films that revolve primarily around women.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
And there's plenty to go around. That's which
oh,
is
have,
awesome to say.
yeah, absolutely. And more to come, I'm sure. So,
Definitely.
and we decided on a topic this for this evening that I thought seemed a little interesting, and maybe it was kicking around in my head because a lot of my favorite movies or favorite horror movies feature this phenomenon or story type. And it's the notion of a woman alone in a horror film. And I didn't really give, I gave you a little bit of an idea of my line of thinking on it, Bill. And I didn't know if we wanted to discuss where we were coming from
Yeah, of
or
course. Let's set the stage, man.
in
Then
terms in
talk
terms
about
of
it.
women being alone, and maybe if there's a specific positive or negative appeal to that type of story. And I was thinking personally, Bill, in the most literal sense, in the movies I was picking out, it is basically a film where it's a female protagonist and it's mostly revolving around their point of view. They have people who kind of enter into their lives, but the people tend to be more perhaps more transient. But basically the bottom line is the story focuses primarily on this one character and usually their vantage point and the experience they go through over the course of the film. So it's not like a Final Girl type situation in the
No.
way I was thinking about it. It's more like,
Right.
yes, this the female in question is the final girl because there just weren't any other girls to begin with. You know, so maybe in that sense, but it's just, I don't know if I want to call the films I picked character studies per se, but it's just
Right.
it's a primary, you know, the primary character is a woman and how they interact with their environment and with the characters who sort of, you know, come within their orbit. So what were you thinking?
Oh man, no, that makes perfect sense. Movies that came to mind right away were a woman experiencing a challenge, and thankfully, if we go back to early horror, women, permeated early horror, but they were used to either cry or scream or faint or had to be rescued by a guy, and which is just ludicrous. And 80s slasher films, that was the rise of the final girl. But then again, the final girl had to be intelligent, which is always good, which is great. But they normally were a little shy, a little introverted, and but they were good girls. They had their vaginas were intact. It was like, they didn't drink, they didn't do drugs, and it's like, oh, come on. And
No sex out of marriage.
Right, exactly. And then later on in like the 90s and and the 2000s since, it's been like, no, let's have real woman characters, let's look back at those, Sigourney Weaver's, Ripley. Let's look at a character who's strong. She's an officer on a ship, and but she still has these fears that she has to face, you know, she loses her crew, she's on her own, save the cat, holy shit, you know. And it was great. We got to see so many faces of her character. I just watched Alien again for, I think, the millionth time, and I'm like, it's just great. You know, great to see this character thrive. So I had all of these movies come into my head where maybe the woman isn't necessarily the sole woman, isn't necessarily the good person, you know, but I had all of these, you know, movies in mind where these women are on their own, or get to the point early on in the film where they're on their own. And it's like, I have to survive. I have to overcome my fears. I have to overcome, and you know, whatever obstacles to survive. And I just love that stuff. So,
yeah, that's really well said, Bill. Like, something I was thinking about was just how are the women in the films I picked kind of depicted? Are they depicted as more independent, or are mm-hmm. they depicted as more needy in some way? And I feel like most of the women that I came up with in the movies I came up with were, you know, very independent.
Yes.
Almost in a sense, like
they're capable.
Exactly. And it's like, in a lot of ways, it's, they don't necessarily need human companionship or mm-hmm. even animal companionship.
Right.
You know, it's just like, these are, in a, even if they are not good characters, or, you know, good in the sense of good versus bad, or, you know, they're definitely, the ones I was thinking about were a little more vague or ambiguous.
Right.
They're not like these unlikable misanthropic characters per se. They're more, mm-hmm. like you said, more challenging. They're facing challenges, and there's a sense of maybe they want to butt heads with this challenge that they're facing. Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? Like, when I watch a movie, I never think, oh, this is a woman alone movie, I'm in. You know, I mm-hmm. never, I want to see a great movie inhabited with great characters. I want a great story. I want a compelling tale. And if, you know, a lot of times it's not until later, much later, days, even weeks, when it's like, oh, wow, that she carried the whole movie. And, you know, I never thought for one, you know, I never thought like, oh man, this is a woman doing this. Isn't this great? Isn't this empowering? Right. You know, I don't think like that. But it was funny because it took a minute once you said, hey, here's the topic ideas. And I was like, huh. And then there was a flood. It was like a flood. Floodgate opened of like all these movie titles. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we could have a podcast alone on this. Meaning that's all we're going to talk about forever, which I think is really good. But I narrowed it down to some things in my mind. It might even be a little bit different from what you even thought of, hopefully. But
no, that's good. I'm actually hoping we didn't think of the same stuff. But, you know, Bill, I'll just say this to kind of get it out of the way, because I know we've talked about certain movies that could fall into this category before on the podcast, sometimes mm-hmm. multiple times. I mean, we've talked about Carrie. And the various incarnations of that. So I didn't feel a need to really bring that one up. And not too long ago, we did talk about Repulsion a bit. So I was kind of like, I was thinking Repulsion is a big one, but we have talked about it in other contexts on this show. And I think we've kind of gone over that territory. So I was like thinking, let's leave maybe some of the more, at least for me anyway, leave some of the bigger names alone and maybe dig into some stuff that's maybe not as, I hate to use the word underappreciated in our minds, but
yeah, well, no, I mean, you and I, you and I watch too much horror, man. We watch, you know, oh, we got a podcast and it's like a job, but it's not. I mean, we love it, but I think we've both reached that point where it's hard to find something cool. But when we do, it's important to bring it up, because one of the movies that came to mind right away is one I recently saw, and I'm upset that I didn't see it when it came out 5 years ago, because it would have been on my best of list for that year. And it's funny because there's a couple of things about it that might set people off. Oh, it's not R-rated, it's PG-13, which normally does set me off, because it's like, oh, that means there's limitations. But it comes out of the Middle East. And I've seen several Middle Eastern horror movies, and I equate them with the word horrible because they're usually male-centric. I recently saw a movie, Grandmother's Farm, which I didn't enjoy at all. It was supposed to be like funny, but it like wasn't. It was one of the things I found interesting. Came out of Dubai, and when you go on IMDb and you look up the movie, the actors are listed, but not the females. And I'm like, and there were so many things that, and it was very centered on, Muslim faith, a lot of the things having to do with the jinn, which I think is fantastic. But and it was great because it was in one way it was like a cultural experience, but I didn't really enjoy the story or the movie. But Under the Shadow is from Babak Anvari. He wrote it as well, and it stars, I'm gonna butcher her name. I wish I Narge Narge Nargess Rashidi. At least I got Rashidi right. And it's about a woman in the early 80s, war-torn Iran. They're at war with Iraq. It's after the revolution with the Ayatollah. So it's a very ultra-conservative, oppressive society. And she was revolutionary to a degree, and now she can't get into med school at all. So she's married, she has a son, and her and her husband has to go off to like the front to help people because he's a doctor. She's alone with the child, and he's like, "Well, I want you to get out of this part of the city in case it gets hit." And she's like, "No, I'm not doing that. It's like, I'm not. I'm going to stay here," which of course has its own consequences. But it was really interesting because it's like, okay, I didn't listen to my husband. Now I'm in trouble. But the thing is, I'm going to get myself out of this trouble. I'm going to try and find out what's going on. And it had a kid in it too, which I hate. It's like, oh, a little kid. But this worked. They made it work. She was so phenomenal in her strength, in the way she dug deep within herself, because at one point communications were cut off. She didn't know if her husband was alive or dead. She didn't know if she was going to make it through the next day. Her neighbors, they all fled to like, "We're out of here." And she's like, and she was staying, and it was like, holy hell. And it kept my interest. Definitely a 4-star out of 5-star movie for me. I really, really enjoyed it. It was really impressive. But just to see her, one of the things I really loved about it was she was strong from the very, very beginning. She had some doubts as a person, and she had some, there was some, cult, there was cultural influence. It's like, "Well, you shouldn't be, or you can't be." And she's like,
Screw you, man.
yeah, exactly. And she stuck to her guns, and well, I'll leave it at that. But I thought it was really impressive, and it was just great to it was just great to see like a war movie that wasn't like UK based or USA based, even though the UK did partner with making this movie happen. But it was just really cool to, again, I got some cultural knowledge, I gained some history, and to see this woman like wanting to like probably run out in the street and scream, but knowing she couldn't, it was great because so she was playing this whole role where she was like, "Ugh!" like the whole time, and she was just great. Like even she had a VHS tape of friggin' a workout from Jane
Jane
Fonda,
Fonda.
yeah, and she had to hide it so people wouldn't go, why, what are you doing with that Western stuff?" I mean,
Jeez.
She got in trouble once because she was out in the street. She didn't have her head covered, when she was called into the police. She was arrested, and it's like, holy shit! So she's got all of this stuff around her going on. Then she has something else supernatural going on, and she's alone, and it's like. But she never rolled over. And that was the beauty of it. She's like, "I keep getting smacked down, told what to do and all, but I'm making a stand. And I'm making a stand for my child." Even when the child hated her. And it's like, holy
Wow.
fuck. So it was like this big emotional thing. So Under the Shadow, if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's great. It is a character study, like you're talking about a moment ago, but I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was really cool how this woman was just like, "I'm a person. I will not be denied." And I love her.
That's awesome, Bill. I haven't seen that one. I think I heard Kim McDonald, Horror Pixie, talking about that probably after it came out.
Oh, that's cool.
And she loves her, you know, she loves foreign horror especially. Yep. So yep. I'm not surprised that she fast tracked that one. So I'll have to check it out. Yeah,
definitely do.
And I like the way you were kind of describing, sort of dancing around it, but describing it a little, Bill, about how she already has all these cultural and personal challenges she's facing. Yeah. And then, like, you establish that, then you establish this other threat or whatever that you have to confront. And then just everything takes on a whole different kind of weight, I think. And that's really good. Good storytelling. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
Cool, man. Let me know what you think.
Yeah, definitely. I wrote it down. Well, Bill, I'm going to start with this one because you might grumble a bit, and I don't think you'll grumble with any of the other ones I have.
We shall see, man.
Well, this is a film with a performance that has just stuck with me since I first saw it, and it plays with tropes. I think how successful it is up to the viewer, but it's a Claire Foy as Sawyer Valentini in Unsane.
Mm-hmm. No, she was amazing. And that's why I was really upset with the movie, because she was freaking amazing.
Yeah, I think for me personally, everybody was going on about how Toni Collette got robbed of an Oscar nomination that year for Hereditary. I'm like,
oh, please.
I was like, I mean, Claire Foy got robbed for Unsane, if I really cared about that stuff, which I don't really, but
yeah, and I love just, Toni Collette. She's one of my favorites, but I was like, come on, not for
yeah, that. It was not. It wasn't good use of Toni Collette, I don't think, or she shouldn't have been the one to carry that whole darn movie. But
well, Alex Wolff, I think, should have gotten the Son. I think he should have gotten an Oscar nod for Best Supporting because he was amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're digressing rapidly.
No. It's okay. But I think the thing. I'll talk more about her character and not necessarily the plot of the movie, because it's directed by Steven Soderbergh and it was done on an iPhone, and it definitely shows. and that Steven Soderbergh, I mean, I'll say Steven Soderbergh knows how to wield an iPhone better than anybody making a found footage movie that's going direct to Redbox right now. But he presents this character who is very kind of tightly coiled, I would say. You know, we're kind of introduced to her and she's in a work environment, dressed very professionally. She's on the phone with a client and she's kind of giving the client just like, hey, this is the way it is. And she's kind of just like letting it. It's like, hey, whatever, you want to be mad kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not going to get to me. And then she seems to like be seeing someone around, like she seems disturbed by someone she sees walking through the office. And we learned that her character had issues with a stalker in the past. And what winds up happening is she winds up being admitted to a mental institution. And Claire Foy, I think, is fantastic in this role. While the film may stretch credibility in terms of its thriller mechanics, I just love this character. I love this character because I was so intrigued by her. Kind of, you know, what's going on with her from the very beginning? Because, you know, the question that the film posits is she just seeing things, or is she actually being followed by somebody? And I kind of like how the film plays with her perceptions of reality and how Soderbergh kind of takes a whole dreamlike, adopts kind of a dreamlike flow to the proceedings, mm-hmm. and that things happen very fast in terms of her going from her kind of white collar, you know, life to being institutionalized. And I think her character is very compelling because she's fighting, I think, with herself kind of in these inner thoughts of like, well, you know, maybe maybe I am going nuts. You know, maybe I am just seeing things. But she never really loses that resolve to be like, hey, I don't belong here. You know, I need to get out of here. You know, it's you don't need to be feeding me pills. There's some commentary about the our health system and what institutions may do to people. And I just, you know, it's just a performance that really haunts me because Claire Foy is just this beautiful actress. She's, you know, she was in The Crown. She was Lisbeth Salander in an unfortunate Girl with a Dragon, Girl in the Spider's Web movie.
Yeah, Spider's Web, yep.
Yeah. But I just found her presence and her performance so compelling. And the fact that Soderbergh kind of uses that harsh iPhone filming aesthetic. The film doesn't look pretty. It looks kind of drab, and it also looks very bright and naturally lit in certain spots. So you can see everybody's faces like close up. There's no like beautification of the actors, I think. You know, you can see every pore of skin basically on a person's face. And I think I love the way Claire Foy goes about sort of embracing that vulnerability and that kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't call it ruggedness, but just kind of like, well, I'm just going to throw myself into this movie. I'm going to wear these thrift store clothes that I got at the mental institution. And I'm just going to go all out in this performance. And she has some magnificent moments throughout the film, I think, in terms of how she plays off the other actors, and how she kind of plays them, plays certain people against one another in a way that's kind of integral to, I think, her survival in a lot of ways. So I just really loved, I love Claire Foy. I love her performance in that film, you know? So, I mean, I know a lot of people, I think our friend DM Elms did not like, the movie either.
Right.
But again, I go back to looking at the female characters, looking at the woman who's for all intents and purposes by herself, you know, she feels she can't trust anybody. She feels she has to get out of a situation or do whatever she has to do. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a good example of that. So.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Yeah. Well, you know, like you, you know, you mentioned, you know, I had so many movies flooding into my head. And I'm like, well, we sort of talked about, you know, I Am the Pretty Thing That Lives in a House before. And we talked about the movie Revenge. And we talked about, you know, well, I don't know.
I'll probably bring that one up, Bill.
I was just going to say, I'm going to stop. So I was like, well, what can I do that's like a little bit different and maybe even strange, in fact. And one came to mind that I've been watching ad nauseum as of late, and I really enjoy the story incredibly well. And this lovely actress, in fact, I will give you her name because many people might not know who she is. She has a major role in the film, yet she doesn't move once. And that is... the actress Olwyn Catherine Kelly, who is in The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Nice.
You can't get any more two men, you know, Emil Hirsch and Brian Cox. Freaking, this whole movie was just, I loved it. Jane Doe is a body that was found in the house. Sheriff said, I need an autopsy right away. I need results by tomorrow because we can't figure out what happened or why. You know, people dead everywhere, and this woman's there. And it's great. It's a real puzzle. It's almost like a how'd she die? There's no external marks on her body. She's completely naked. They find peat moss under her nails. And then they have to do the autopsy. So Brian Cox and his son, you know, they digging in, and each time they think, hey, that's weird. Hey, that shouldn't, what's going, hey, holy shit, you know, and everything just goes bonkers. And it was really intriguing because the more they got into her, the more they invaded her, the worse things got for them and the world around them, which was amazing. And as they're going through, and I'm trying to avoid spoilers here like a maniac, they discovered that she was severely abused in certain ways. Like even her, like her vaginal area was like cut, like she was stabbed there. You know, the phallic symbol, the whole imagery, the male dominance, you know, this disgusting thing happened. And they yet, in order to find this, they have to violate her again and probe her to find these things. And she was amazing. I mean, she's just like, okay, you're gonna be naked the
Yeah,
entire
yeah.
movie from head to toe, and you can't move, and that's it. And she was incredible. I can't even imagine. I would love to see behind the scenes, like how like everybody got around this. Like I could even see the director Andre Avardal going, "Okay, this is what we're gonna do," and Brian Cox going, "What? You know, like what did my agent get me into?" You know, but it was just so interesting to see a woman who was dead yet commanding the stage, yet still having power, and being, you know, like, you know, men always joke, "Oh man, I don't get women, they're a mystery." Well, hey man, there you go. You know, like you can't get any more mysterious than Jane Doe on a slab, and you can't figure out what the hell's going on and why she's there to begin with.
You know what, Bill? That's a really good choice, and it did cross this that one did cross my mind as well.
Nice.
And I was you're so right with like the imagery of males violating a woman, but you know, in this case, it's the job of the men to uncover this story. But again, it's like they're going literally deeper and deeper and deeper. You know, not to sound too pornographic about it, but you know, it is that same sort of notion, and that's I hadn't considered the movie from that angle before, but you're totally right. And there's that thing of how she's expressing so much by not expressing anything,
Yeah.
you know, facially
Overtly.
or with gestures or anything. Yeah. So that is a really a nice unconventional choice. I like that. Yeah.
Thank you. That's what I'm about, Johnny.
Yeah. Twist it up, man. Twist it up. Well, Bill, you know, I'm dancing between
Ooh.
two different ones here, but I think I'm gonna go with this one because it does touch on notions of empowerment, I think, while maintaining a sort of crypticness. And maybe there's a bit of vagueness to how good the empowerment is in this movie.
Okay.
But it's Antichrist
Ah, man, I
by
was thinking of that
Art.
today. Yep.
You know what? And I think this one, my rationale for this one is that it's
I was just
a
gonna
man and
say.
well, it's a man and a woman, Willem Dafoe and Charlotte Gainsbourg, and they don't even have names.
Right.
They're sort of ripped asunder by the tragic loss of their child, which happens like within the first 2 minutes of the movie. And the man decides to take his wife out to a cabin, isolated cabin in the woods. And you know, nothing good can ever come of that sort of situation. And but the thing of it is, the man is a psychiatrist. And the reason I think of this film as a woman alone is because he is so focused on clinical things, cold things, not emotional things. He's not necessarily good at meeting his wife's needs in her time of grief, and she's been having a protracted response to the loss of a child, which is totally understandable. And then things in the woods start to manifest in strange ways. It's like nature is kind of starting to turn against
Mother Nature?
it. A case could be made. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying, man. I'm dropping the mic and leaving.
Yeah, there you go. That was really good. But I think Charlotte Gainsbourg is just in general, she's a really powerful
Oh,
actress.
hell yeah.
And again, Lars von Trier is a director who kind of I feel like attracts just actors in general who are up to facing a challenge, because
Esoteric.
esoteric, very disagreeable, and sometimes, a lot of times, I think that's very intentional on his part. He wants to sometimes troll a bit when he's doing stuff. But I think Gainsbourg is fantastic in this film, and she just channels that. You know, you said Mother Nature, Bill. I feel like she channels kind of something innate and primal in the emotions and the anger she expresses, and the way she acts out in a lot of ways. It doesn't, in a strange way, the way von Trier tells the story, he doesn't necessarily make either character out really to be a villain or a hero.
Right.
It's more like just, well, this is what happened during our retreat to the woods one weekend and the subsequent fallout. But I just think, what he does with just imagery and how that imagery kind of blends in with the characterization and just certain things that occur during the third act of that film as things get increasingly strange is, you know, she maintains a real credibility, I think, throughout the film.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's like it's not playing to the cheap seats. You know, it's not none of the performances are overwrought or hammy or anything like that, which makes, I think, them even more powerful and even more frightening and challenging in a way. So I really like von Trier just in the sense that he leaves you with a lot of questions. He leaves you thinking about what you've just seen, you know, whether it's Dogville or the house that Jack built.
Dogville, man, wow.
Yeah, Dogville is, oh, that's a tough movie.
What an ending. One of the greatest endings of all time.
Yeah. So yeah, I was thinking of Charlotte Gainsbourg, who is really like a woman who's trying to, she's not really getting help from her head shrinker hubby. So,
nope.
So I think ultimately it might be a combination of her own resolve and the nature around her that kind of commingles to create something that's the equivalent of coping in a strange way. So,
yep. Exactly. Yeah. I like that, man. And because you brought that up, you're compelled me to bring this one up.
Okay, good.
And this one stars Kate Siegel. And a lot of people really enjoyed this one. I'm not really a fan of home invasion movies because to me they just pathetic and weak and they suck and they're so trope-filled. But Hush was different. And I know our good friend Bleeding Critic enjoyed this one as well, which is really good to hear, because when we agree on something, that's like, that's really good. So
he spares no quarter with his opinions.
No, and it's a beautiful thing. And when he loves something, he loves something. The Clown Prince of Horror. But Hush is really interesting because there's a woman who's deaf. She's a writer. I mean, what a loser, huh? A writer. She retreats into the woods to live, a solitary lifestyle. And so she lives this life in silence among nature all around her. She has a neighbor that's a little bit distant, you know. But other than that, she's alone in this house, you know, glass windows all around, you know, big glass, all that stuff. And she's doing her writing thing. And one day, a jerk shows up. And, of course, it's a guy. And it was really interesting what he did, because it's like, oh, another masked guy. And it's like, you know, and he pretty much explains why he wore the mask to her at one point and whatnot. But he's trying to get into the house. He's trying to get to her. He's trying to, you know, kill her, do whatever. And, you know, what do you do if you're alone and you're deaf and you can't hear how or where he's coming in? Mm-hmm. That, and I know we're not going to talk about it on this show, but one of the elements to a horror film is that element of instilling fear in the audience and maintaining that. And this movie just did, because one of the things that they did with the movie, they were showing sometimes things from her perspective in the film and no sound. And it was really disconcerting. It's like, shit, you know, it's like, what the hell is going to happen? You know, how is it going to happen? How is she going to defend herself? How is she going to stay alive? And again, this was great. She's, you know, it's I have to be my own savior. No one else is going to come for me. I have to stop this guy. She at one point tried to reason with him and all of this and that. And he's like, forget it, man. Forget it, lady. You're going down. He's probably seeing her as easy prey. Like the scumbag he is. And the beauty of it is, you know, she just shows resolve up until, you know, the very end. I'm not going to talk about the ending or anything like that. But it was just great how, you know, he saw her as easy prey. Oh, she's a woman. She's deaf. This is great. You know, and she's like, no, I'm a person and this is my home, my life. I'm going to defend it. And you just picked on the wrong deaf woman. And and I just really loved that. And I really thought, you know, Mike Flanagan, you know, he directed this and he co-wrote it with Kate Siegel. Which I think is awesome. And to have those scenes where there was complete silence, and in a horror movie, silence is gigantic. It's such a major part of it. You know, you got some jump scares from it and everything else. And to see that like obliterated, it just added to the fear because you're like, oh crap, what's going on? You know, where is he? Is he going to come through the ceiling? Holy crap, I can't hear anything. But I just loved her resolve again to, defend herself when at one point it seemed so totally hopeless.
Yeah, I agree with all that, Bill. I really like that movie.
Yeah, me too.
And I, you know, it's been a couple of years since I watched it, but I still think about it kind of on a semi-regular basis. So that's always a good thing. But I like to what you were saying about how he cuts the sound out to, you know, assimilate the viewer to her POV.
Right.
I think that's a fantastic idea.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just like upping the, she doesn't know, we don't know until she knows something, you know? And I, you know, we've talked about this many a time on this show where I hate when we're ahead of the character.
Oh, that's the worst.
Or characters. And then we got to wait for the character to catch up.
Stranger Things. That's why I hate it.
Yeah, exactly. And, so that's what I liked about this film is that by sort of adopting her point of view, you're kind of, you're left experiencing the jumps and the shocks and the scares with right alongside Maddie.
Yep.
So I think that was really clever. So I'm guessing something I like about Flanagan as a director is just, he approaches a challenge and he executes, you know, he'll execute a story with such confidence, you know, cause he did Gerald's Game, which was a woman handcuffed to a bed for like 90 minutes.
I had a lot of issues with that movie, but anyway, yeah.
Well, they probably stem from Stephen King's book then.
I know. Carla Gugino, baby.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah.
She's amazing.
And yeah, you know, and even, you know, Dr. Sleep, which was just like, yeah. he made these alterations to the book and blended it with the Shining universe, and it didn't seem like a big deal. You know, it was like,
that was good.
I felt the same way. I was like, he did a good job.
I was impressed.
Yeah. Fusing those worlds together. So, so that's kind of something I like when I see he's done something. I still need to watch. Well, I still need to watch The Haunting of Hill House. But
the series.
Yeah. I haven't seen that.
No, yet. You don't. You don't need to watch that.
You know, I've heard that from like you and someone else that I hold in high regard. So I'm really surprised.
I watched two episodes and I wanted to jump out a window.
Oh boy. Okay. All right.
Why is it a soap opera? Why is it a soap opera? That's all I kept saying. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, in any case, maybe to drift on to something a bit more positive. I think you were getting close to mentioning this one, Bill. I love this film. It's probably one of my favorites of the last 10 years. It's Mickey Keating's Darling.
Yep. I knew it. That's why I stopped myself.
thank you, Bill. It was You're a little welcome. Bit of a surprise. Yeah. But this is just, you know, I said, we're not talking about Repulsion, but this film takes a lot of beats from Repulsion in the best possible ways.
Absolutely.
You know, it's very much, we could do a show on, Mickey Keating and how he does his films, or maybe I'll write something about him sometime. But, you know, this is a film that is ingeniously shot in black and white, even though it was from 2015. It has a very old-timey classic film look to it in the locations and the settings, costumes. It seems to be taking place in the 50s or 40s or something, not modern times. But the lead character is named Darling, and she's played by the lovely Lauren Ashley Carter.
Love her, man.
Yeah, yeah, she's great in this. This is probably my favorite performance of hers. She's playing a very kind of timid, quiet kind of character who gets this job looking after the townhouse of this wealthy socialite played by Sean Young. And it's the movie is basically her just getting the lay of the land of this sort of fascinating structure. I love the house as a location and as a setting. It's just brilliant and brilliantly foreboding. And something that I like also is that you don't have a backstory with Darling.
Thank God.
Yeah. There's no intimations of there's no like a heavy-handed exposition saying, oh, well, this happened because of such and such, and oh, we should have seen this coming. No, it's not like that at all. The closest we get is these scenes where she encounters a man on the street, played by Brian Morvant, who's, you know, he looks like a relatively unthreatening, innocuous fellow, but she feels threatened by him in some way. And it becomes this recurring thing in the film where she meets up with him, you know, she invites him over, and it's this weird relationship where she's acting kind of off, but he doesn't seem to notice it for one reason or another. It's a very tricky film because I think Lauren Ashley Carter does a great job of keeping the character on the even keel and credible throughout. It's not like she goes into histrionics or anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's a very subdued kind of subtly expressive performance from her. You know, she does a lot with her eye movements, you know, what she does with her kind of like a smile or a frown or something like that. It's very nuanced work, and I think it's given extra weight through the black and white photography. It makes it seem somewhat more uncertain, somewhat more gray and menacing in a way. But throughout, you kind of don't know what this character has been through. You don't know where they're going. You know, there are certain things she sees that we don't see. So there's the question of the reliable narrator or unreliable narrator. Right. So there's just so much I love about this movie, but it is absolutely anchored by Lauren Ashley Carter's performance throughout.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things Keating did, I don't know if this was his intention or not. I haven't read it anywhere, but it's like, I know, you know, you heard he was watching a lot of movies from the 1960s. So he felt like, hey man, let's do this black and white. But it was funny because I think it was something that Darling wanted. She wanted a black and white world where she could, you know, figure out what was going on, and it wasn't as much as she wanted it to be. So I thought on a thematic level that worked really well for her character.
That's yeah, I like that. Yeah, let's go with that.
Oh man.
No, I was just thinking to myself, oh, it's just this cool aesthetic choice he wanted to do. I wasn't quite thinking of the Was there more to it? But that's good. I like that.
All right, I like that too, because you know sometimes we talk about certain things, it gets under my skin, and oh my gosh, what a bad segue! Oh, under the skin. I was trying to think of something that was, you know, like Autopsy of Jane Doe, where it doesn't seem like it's femme-centric or necessarily positive. And in Under the Skin, which I love, it made my best horror of all time list. Under the Skin stars Scarlett Johansson. And I remember the early reports from some people, from women actually, was like, oh, guys are just going to see this because she's naked in it. And I'm like, what? Who would, what? So I watched the film because I wanted to see it anyway. And it's a sci-fi horror. It's dramatic. It's intense. She is the film. She carries the whole movie. A lot of times the camera is right in her face. Yes, she does appear nude, but it's not gratuitous in any way, shape, or form. And it's not, you can't even argue that it's actually sexy.
I was going to say, it's not arousing at all.
Yeah, not at all. So, and that really bothered me because I'm sure Jonathan Glazer, who directed it, was, you know, wanted to punch a wall when he heard people saying, it's like, come on, you haven't seen the movie yet. You're passing judgment. You think this is some fly-by-night, you know, stupid movie. And we tried to do something really strong here, which they did. They have a character who is morally questionable. Then that character comes to realize that maybe they're morally questionable. And it's like, well, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do about it? Can I do anything about it? Should I do anything about it? And it's a character study in what this individual goes through under her skin. And I love the portrayal. Scarlett Johansson was strong in it, as one would expect. And I thought it was a great it was great that she strayed away from characters that we'd normally expect her to do. This is something that did seem unexpected. And therefore, it was shocking in a different way because I was like, wow, I can't believe she played this role. And it's great that she's, like, you know, confident enough to play this part because this woman, who's just called the female in the film, is quite intriguing. It's very different from the norm in many ways. But it was great to see her journey and how she felt and what she needed to do to survive and maybe possibly make the choice of, well, should I be living even, you know, at one point. And it was very intriguing in that regard, what she was going through as a person in general and as a woman. So I know I'm not saying much because I don't want to give it away. So watch it.
Yeah, absolutely, Bill. And I'll just say this, in a way, it is kind of like a strange coming of age tale.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You nailed it.
Yeah.
You nailed it.
But it is, yeah, it's a really good movie and one I need to give another spin because I like what Jonathan Glazer did a lot. And to what you said, Bill, Scarlett Johansson, it was just a very challenging, risk-taking role for her. And I really have a lot of admiration for her as an actress to just, you know, literally bare herself, but also kind of bare her soul in a way that we don't often see, you know.
Right.
You know, I think there was a lot of, she did a lot with, again, with gestures, with facial expressions, and not a lot of dialogue. So,
and a lot of people in there are extreme unknowns. You know, they took a lot of risks with this movie from stem to stern, and some things that might be surprising to some people. And I was just like mesmerized the entire ride. Johnny, are you there? Oh, we lost Johnny. Oh, he's coming back.
Yeah, I'm here.
Cool. Do you want to have this capability to accept incoming? Yes, I do. Let me see if we're still recording. Man. No, it's not your fault. We've had a nice storm today, all that nasty crap. And we've been recording, so it's good. Yeah, we're good to go.
All right. Sorry, I just missed a few things you said there, but
no, it doesn't matter. It was all important too, but no, don't worry about it. Let's see. I have a feeling you're going to bring up this one, and this one I realize isn't maybe. It's if we do coming of age stories, I have to use. We should. I don't think we ever did a show on coming of age.
I think we were going to, but wound up not doing it for some reason.
Right, well, we need to go back to that.
Well, we can do that.
This one I'm bringing up, I know I've had the star of the film and a director on a couple of times and are in the middle of filming the sequel.
Oh, yeah.
But it one of those films that really got to me on a level where I almost had, I was starting to have a panic attack. And I'm like, well, this is a really good movie because they're making me do that. And that is Crawl or Die, starring Nicole M. Alonso or Nikki Alonso. And it's written, directed, and edited by Oklahoma Ward. They're now engaged, if people didn't know. Isn't that great? She plays a character called Tank in the film. And, you know, early on, she's part of a group of, you know, military people are trying to move a package and all that fun stuff. And they go underground and they get into a situation where they're overwhelmed by a negative, this is sci-fi horror, an alien force. And the only thing they could do is they're in this area that, you know, they're not familiar with it, but they have to keep crawling. They have to keep crawling through tubes and whatnot. And because if you don't, you're going to die, hence the title Crawl or Die. And watching her character, she's in real life, she's from New Jersey, so Nikki Strong. That's it. That's all I got to say. But she's a strong character, but she does not disguise her vulnerabilities. And as she's crawling through this movie and things get smaller and smaller and tighter and more restrictive and the thing's practically nipping at her heels and she's like, you know, I got to keep crawling. You could tell that's like she's really suffering. She really wants to give up, but she can't. I mean, it's just one of those things. It's like we do see those films and where a character like, I can't do it anymore. I'm giving up. And they don't make it. And this other character might want to give up, but you know, we watch their struggle till the end. And and she struggles till the end. You know, can I escape this thing? Where am I even crawling to? You know, is it going to get small? Am I going to get stuck? So you have that claustrophobic element. Someone even said the most claustrophobic movie ever made. But the one thing that I just really loved about it was she was strong and vulnerable at the same time, all the time. And that reminded me so much of Ripley's character in Alien, where she was just like, okay, we're going to blow this fucker into space. And it's like, oh my God, but he's right there. Mom, mother, turn on the cooling again. You know, we can't blow up the ship. And it's like, you know, what do I do? And it was that same type of push-pull effect, that fight or flight that we have. You know, she had no choice in the movie. Both of them didn't. They both had to flee because they were both intelligent to realize, I can't fight that thing. I'm going to die. So what do you do? How do you get away? How do you get away to win to maybe fight another day? And so I really liked that those elements. And it was just really cool to see her character just, you know, just it was an hour and a half struggle of her crawling. And I know during filming, you know, they had to worry about scorpions where they were filming. In the Southwest, so it's like, man, no wonder, you know, no wonder sometimes you're looking, it's like, I'm like, is Nikki really acting, or is she really feeling this? Maybe she was feeling it, I don't know, so.
You know what, yeah, Bill, you bring up the, like, her emotional struggle, but I love the physical aspect of that movie.
Oh, which hell yeah.
I love that Oklahoma Ward built this film around this conceit of, you know, okay, it's a bad situation. It's made worse because you have to go through this succession of increasingly tight spaces to get to the end, basically. And I really love how she has the mental fatigue, but she also has the physical fatigue of just like continuing onward. And I think that's another Ripley-ism, you know, before Ripley became Rambette, as you called her, in Aliens, I think. Oh, you know, Tank is definitely more aligned with the Ripley of Alien. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. Because even in the beginning, when she's you know freaked out and everything's falling apart, she's still trying to protect this package that they're trying to move. She's still trying to stay on mission. She's trying to help her comrades in arms, and then it reaches a point where it's like, oh man, you know, alone in the dark. You know, it's you know, exactly. Crawling for my life. And it's like, oh my God. And that ties in with Hush, you know, there was a lot of times where Nikki couldn't see and crawl or die, but you know, in Hush, she couldn't hear. And it's like, but there's an attacker around, where they're coming from. It's like playing on the fears. It's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. That's another one I need to rewatch. So
It's tough for me to rewatch because it really rips my guts out. And
yeah,
that's a good thing. That's a great thing. People need to see it.
From what I remember, it's like I think I had a similar reaction because I'm already claustrophobic. So you do a film about people in tunnels. And I mean, the Descent had that effect on me at a couple points too, where it was just like, oh, this is tight and I can't.
Can't take it anymore.
I'm in a big room and I can't breathe right now. So, yeah, definitely. So that movie affected me on a couple of levels. So
awesome.
Well, Bill, you did two in a row, so I guess
I know. I didn't realize. I'm sorry. I'm a rambling fool. I apologize.
I'm done.
I blew my load.
That's good to know, Bill.
Yeah, I can't believe I just said that.
I can.
Edit this, Johnny. Edit this show.
Well, you know what? Another movie that kind of is stuck in my head and I think about very often, and I also think about why more, again, to what you said about Crawl or Die, Bill, why haven't more people seen this movie? Mm-hmm. And it is the movie Like Me.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Damn. Great one.
Yeah. One of my favorite female characters, again, of probably the millennium, is Kaya, played by Addison Timlin, who is a tiny force of nature in this movie and in other movies. But she is playing a character who is basically, she's going on this sort of low-level crime spree and recording it on her phone and posting it to social media. She wants to be viral or social media famous by doing these increasingly criminal things. And I just love that her character, again, like Darling, no backstory.
Yep.
You know, we don't know how old she is. We don't know anything about her family life, the experiences she's had to bring her to where she is, if any. You know, and because of Miss Timlin's short stature, you don't really get quite, there's kind of a strange line on what kind of age she's supposed to be depicting. She's old enough to drive a car, and she gains the interest of Larry Fessenden, who owns a hotel and might or might not be a predatory character. But the thing with her performance is just how there's this disaffection to it.
Yeah,
but there is also this emotion to it. But she has this kind of weird stoicism where you're never quite sure what she's thinking at a given time. But even when she's sharing scenes with Larry Fessenden, who's like twice as big as her and twice as tall,
yeah,
you almost feel like she's kind of the intimidating one. You know, it's like Larry Fessenden should be worrying about her and not the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But it's bizarre because her character is not presented like a bratty, sort of obnoxious teenager.
No, not at all. Not at all.
If anything, there's sort of like this weathered kind of world weariness to the character. Like she kind of wants to place herself within these potentially dangerous scenarios. And again, like the other characters we've talked about, she wants to take control of situations. Like there's a scene early on where Larry Fessenden walks into her hotel room and you think it's going to go one way, like a Lolita seduction kind of thing. And it totally goes in a different direction. And the whole time she is the one commanding power in the situation. And I think maybe that's why, as the relationship between her and Fessenden continued on, I was like, yeah, I think Fessenden's probably more frightened of her. And he's probably, cause he's probably as mystified and kind of intimidated as we are. But at the same time, I really love this character because she does kind of embody this. She embodies the character the person who wants all that social media attention, like they want people, followers on Twitter, Instagram, but at the same time she seems totally disaffected by it, except when this guy comes on YouTube and starts
deconstructing
deconstructing her crime spree.
He was great.
I forget what the guy's name is, but he's played by Ian Nelson, and he was fantastic because he was like the
Bert.
He was Bert.
Yeah, and I loved it. Bert. I'm Bert, and I'm gonna eat you alive.
And he was just like this counterbalance to everything she's doing, all these excessive neon soaked things that she's doing in her kind of directionless life that's being somehow subsidized by some means too. And that's something that's never explained as well. So
exactly.
Just, you know, she's just a very enigmatic character. And I think that's why I like her so much. It's mm-hmm. just, you know, and Addison Timlin is just fantastic because again, like, you know, like you were talking about the character, the actress from Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yeah.
It's like Addison Timlin is just, she's keeping, probably reeling in a lot of emotion that mm-hmm. she could be expressing. But the director, writer-director Robert Mockler was probably like, no, I don't want you to do it like that.
Yeah.
It was probably like, I want you to play it even and don't go over the top and just feel like you're holding back, which is actually the more challenging thing I've heard for an actor, is to express yourself less rather than more. So
great movie.
I love that movie. I love her character. It's people who follow me on Facebook or Twitter, she's mm-hmm. my header photo on both of those, because I'm just so continuously fascinated by that enigma and that movie. So
nice, man. Good one.
Yeah, thank you. The last one I'm going to bring up maybe goes back the furthest, but it's one of my all-time favorite movies. Maybe sort of this character was maybe sort of the forerunner for the sort of willfully independent woman, and it's Mary Henry, played by Candace Hillegas in Carnival mm-hmm. of Souls. I have loved this movie for a long time. And again, maybe not unlike Claire Foy and Unsane, Mary Henry is this character who's she's young. She's kind of headstrong. She's involved in an accident and she's the only survivor. And, you know, that's really the only time we only get to know her after the accident. And she's very, not standoffish, but she's very dismissive of help. She's very determined that she's not going to come back to this town she's leaving. And she stands up to males and, you know, mostly these male characters who come into her orbit. You know, there's a guy at the organ factory who's kind of saying, well, you know, you just can't just run away from life. And she's just like, well, that's all fine and dandy, but I'm never coming back. You know, she has a guy at the boarding house at the town she moves to who's kind of sleazy, wants to maybe get her in the sack. You know, he makes some very arch gestures to kind of get to know her better, which could, you know, would probably be read kind of with a definite red flag these days.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she kind of has to convince herself that she wants companionship, but she really doesn't want companionship. She's an organist, but she doesn't care about the church.
Exactly.
And she flat out says this to the pastor who hires her. You know, it's like, can we skip the luncheon with the church ladies and everything? It's a really great moment, and the pastor is kind of taken aback by it. And I love that because I feel like, you know, she is standing up in a way. Mm-hmm. You know, there is this coldness to her, but I feel like there's something to it. And, you know, to say nothing for the spectral man that she starts to see periodically throughout the film, played by director Herc Harvey, you know, is that, you know, people have speculated, is that supposed to be an image of her father? Is she haunted by something from her past? Like, again, like these other characters I've been bringing up where you don't have the clean cut backstories. And Hillegas is just fantastic. I think she depicts this woman kind of on this strange plane of existence very well. Mm-hmm. And she convinces you of this feeling of being kind of, yes, I'm in the real world, but I feel lost in the world. I don't feel like I belong. I don't feel like there's a place for me. And I think that's something hugely endearing about this film is what comes out of that performance.
Especially when it was made in the 60s, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's perfect. It's such a contrast to, you know, people trying to hold on to that happy days, that ludicrously named happy days world of the 50s and the male-dominated, you know, society.
Absolutely.
It was great.
Yeah, it felt like a movie that was really trying to break with those notions. And
it did.
Yeah, and I think that's something like in later years of watching, I'm like, yeah, that's really, that was clever. You know, that was clever in that they did that, you know, and how they did that and how unassuming it felt. So, yeah, Carnival of Souls is kind of the ultimate for me when it comes to this specific kind of niche of horror of women being alone. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, that's awesome. I didn't mention Ms. 45 at all, cause I had this feeling you were going to bring it up and you didn't, but that's okay. There's more shows down the line.
Well, we might do something that we could fit Ms. 45 into.
Yeah. And I, you know, for people like, hey, what about I Spit on Your Grave. We've talked about all of those movies, time and time again, and you know, that's another one we could have brought up as well. I was thinking of the movie Teeth that we could have brought up too.
That's a good one. You know, I was thinking, Bill, there's like a whole other show we could do just focus solely on female revenge films too, you know.
Shit. Yeah, let's do that. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm ready.
So maybe that'll be the next thing we do.
Because the month ain't over.
Nope, not by a long shot, even though it is a short month.
Even though it is a short month, but these people are not short on awesomeness that I'm going to mention now. Let me take a sip of coffee. I know how this shit works. These are Screamouts, and these are wonderful souls you could follow on Twitter. I'll give you their names, Twitter handles, a little bit about them, and then we'll close out the show. Connie Satterfield, and that's Connie JoJo 2. I love horror movies, horror lovers, horror family, and horror art. Do not own any picks, just sharing for fun. She's out of the great state of Ohio. Connie's a wonderful person. Follow her on Twitter, please. D-O-T-D Horror. Don't Open the Door Podcast. Three comrades talk about the best and worst of horror. New episodes on Mondays. Listen on all streaming services. Link below. So go to check them out on Twitter. They're awesome. It's another great horror podcast. Love them, so hopefully you will love them too. Karina, who's Karina? Her handle is 1977 CHOBSON, Chobson. Married for 22 years to the absolute best man ever. Johnny, you and I lost again. We have four smart, kind, and beautiful daughters. I love movies, music, and pets. She's just awesome. A wonderful soul. Please follow her. And here we go. ISOYG 1978. What's that? That's the I Spit on Your Grave Twitter handle. That's the official Mir Zarchi page. And it's the official account for him. Controversial movies like I Spit on Your Grave 1978 and I Spit on Your Grave Deja Vu. Out of Los Angeles, of course. And go to ispitonyourgravemovies.com for more. Twisted Tuesday 8. They are hosting movies from the graveyard, and they're hosted by Lord's Prayer 6. What does that mean? You'll have to find out. So go there and check it out. Alyssa, or Alyssa, depending on who you are and how you say it, Alyssa Laylax, L-A-Y-L-A-X, loves horror movies, 80s, music, and gaming. Her husband is Crispy Boomstick. Any horror fan knows what that's all about. They're out of the UK. They're amazing. Follow them. Killer Horror Critic, and that's The Killer from Space. That's where you find them on Twitter. A killer site supporting all voices in the horror genre, home to the KHC podcast. Send all press releases and inquiries to killerhorrorcritic@gmail.com out of LA, and go to their website, killerhorrorcritic.com. Sarah, who's Sarah? She is rural. I did it. 51. Rural 51. I've had trouble with that word since I was a kid.
The rural juror, Bill.
be quiet. Random random drivel spewed here, but probably over there, baby talking your pet. I enjoyed the Blood Eagle immensely. How about them Packers? We all know the Packers took a dive. She's from the land of cheese, but Sarah is cool and tough. And my Browns aren't in the main show either, so life's, you know, we could commiserate. Mr. Blue Lou Boyle, B-O-Y-L-E, cult films and heavy metal music, out of the Sunshine State. I wish I was on the beach right now. Finally, last but definitely not least, the underscore weirdling. I read, watch, or listen to nothing but dark, creepy, weird, gothic, gory, spooky horror stuff. That's it. I'm a man of limited interests. But what a brain, what a wit. So there you go. Those are our scream outs for this show during awesome. Women in Horror Month.
Yes. Excellent, Billy. You can find me at Crash... I'm sorry. Now I'm the one fucking up. I start with the social media handles, then move on to the website. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies, but there are B's in the Numbs. You can also find my writing at CrashPalaceProductions.com because Billy is a sweetheart. And sometime this month, if not already, you'll be seeing my first article at TheScreeningSpace.com. Ooh. Yeah, by our good friend... the site is run by our good friend Susie Layton on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. She's wonderful, intelligent, gripping soul, and love that lady very much so.
Yes.
Me, you could find me at Crash Palace on Twitter, also at CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and wonderful articles from our own Johnny Numb and, of course, Susie Layton. Among others, even Horror Pixie has an article, and we mentioned DN Elms before. Yep. Same as well. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Noir Kink for my crime fiction novels that take place in New York City's BDSM and gay communities. And that's it.
Yep, and I'm looking forward to book 4, Bill. So
I'm looking forward to finishing it. It's quite a different animal.
Awesome,
man. Thanks, Johnny.
All right. Yeah, no problem, man. Well, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time.
Next time with another show on Women in Horror for the month of February.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right. Bye.